This is Investor IQ on News Radio 570 WWNC.
Thanks for joining us this morning. We're on News Radio 570 WWNC, the talk of the mountains. My name is Glenn Wessel, and this is Investor IQ. Before the break, we were discussing closed-ended funds and some of the issues that people might find when they inadvertently invest in a fund that they don't understand. I wanted to finish that discussion up with just a few quick points. The idea that I was making last segment was that it would be far better to buy those funds at a discount than to purchase at a premium or at new issue. I just wanted to give a couple of examples of some funds that have come public in the last 5 or 7 years, something like that, and what has happened to their prices. BlackRock Insured Municipal Income Investment Trust, part of the BlackRock Group, organized a fund, or this fund, in 2002. It sold initially at a 5% premium. The five-year average discount, or the average discount over the last 5 years, was almost 9%. That means if you bought it at that 5% premium, and then the share price went down 9%, that would be about a 14% swing against you for no reason, just by avoiding the shares when they were issued. You could have avoided that. Sun America is another fund that has issued a closed-ended fund in May of 2005. It's actually called the Focused Alpha Growth Fund. That's quite a name. That was also issued at a 5% premium. The average three-year discount has been over 13%. So 13 and 5 is about 18%. That's an 18% swing. So if you think of these funds earning somewhere around 5, 6, 7%, that's 3 or 4 years worth of return that you're losing just by making a purchasing error. So keep that in mind next time you're looking in the closed-end fund universe. We have another question, one more for today, I think, Alice.
Yes, another listener, Mary, has written in with a pretty specific question. She says, my agent wants me to move $99,000 from a CD that will mature later this month into a Ginny Mae fund, which is offered by a Franklin fund. The fund yields about twice as much as my CD, and he tells me that the fund is government guaranteed. I could use the extra income, but I'd appreciate your thoughts before I do it.
Right. That fund will offer a greater yield than CDs. So the basic premise of this question is, if a CD yields 2% and a Ginnie Mae fund offers 4% and they're both government guaranteed, why on earth would anyone hold a CD? Well, there are actually some very good reasons. I'm not a fan of CDs. Actually, a lot of advisors refer to CDs as certificates of depreciation because they don't tend to keep up with inflation. That notwithstanding, CDs are a very secure investment, and they could have a place in someone's portfolio. So Ginnie Mae's is really kind of an acronym for Government National Mortgage Association. It amounts to an arm of HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, or the Federal Housing Administration. It's a government-sponsored or government entity that is offer securities that are direct obligations of the federal government. So they are guaranteed in terms of their creditworthiness. You are guaranteed, if you purchase a Ginnie Mae security or a Ginnie Mae fund, of getting repaid and getting repaid timely. So that's good. So far, it's even with a CD. The problem with Ginnie Mae's is that there are all sorts of other risk that goes into the soup that helps to explain why that yield differential favors the Ginnie Mae. For instance, Ginnie Mae securities have substantial amounts of interest rate risk, which means if interest rates move up, the value of that Ginnie Mae security and the fund itself will move down. The longer term the instruments that fund is investing in, the more sensitive that fund will be to changes in interest rates. The problem, or another problem with Ginnie Mae's, is that if interest rates fall, most bonds or fixed income type securities will tend to rise in value, but not so much Ginnie Mae. So what's the bottom line there? When you have interest rates that move around, if interest rates move up, your value of your investment will certainly decline. However, if interest rates decline, the value of your investment is not likely to rise very much. So it has what a securities analyst would call an asymmetrical risk-reward profile. You get injured disproportionately more than you get helped due to interest rate swings. So why would that be? The simple reason to that, or answer to that, is that investors who have financed their homes and who have mortgages, they're the ones who are paying the Ginny Mae securities interest and principal. As they make their mortgage payments, those mortgage payments flow through to you. So you get those mortgage payments. The problem is that most mortgages are written in such a way that the mortgage holder or the mortgage or the homeowner has the option to refinance the house if it makes sense. So when would that make sense? It would make sense to refinance when interest rates go down. So when interest rates go down and most bonds appreciate in value, Ginnie Mae investors know that Ginnie Mae securities might get paid off. So why on earth would another Ginnie Mae investor pay more for a security if it might get paid off at any given time? So that's why they don't appreciate like other bonds when interest rates go down. However, if interest rates go up, the value of Ginnie Mae's will certainly go down just like any other bond. Why would that be? Because as interest rates move up, investors suffer what's called extension risk. That means the homeowner is going to find any reason possible to stay in that home and to keep that low-rate mortgage. So if you have a 5% mortgage in a 10% world, you're going to be devising all kinds of reasons not to move. And that mortgage will not get paid off any sooner than it needs to be. So there are many factors that work against the investor in that respect. And those extra risks, which are very real, goes to explaining why the yield differential. So that answer from the agent or advisor of Mary, speaking to the credit guarantee, is really a very superficial answer because it doesn't really explain the five or six other risks that come into play. So I think that pretty much takes us to the end of our segment here. By the way, I didn't mention that Alice also works in our office. She handles the bookkeeping and the administrative end of things, and she's not just sitting here randomly. So that winds it up. Next week, join us here on WWNC 570. We'll make another segment. We'll take another stab at improving your investor IQ. My name is Glenn Wessel, and that's all the time we have today. Thank you very much.